this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, The New Tar Heel Factory, How General Electric reinvented its decades-old Mebane facility into a humming high-tech production plant. And that's on the cover page, but inside, the article begins with the second headline, The New Face of North Carolina Manufacturing, Mebane's newly retooled high-tech GE factory, is a welcome economic boost to this bedroom community. And this article is written by Cameron Snipes. Victoria Crisp has worked at General Electric's Mebane plant for about a year and a half. She's a lighting panel production worker, laboring on the line that is responsible for the highest volume production in the entire 400,000-square-foot facility. And she can shut it down anytime she feels the need and idle out an entire section of the plant. In fact, any of the line's workers have that power. It's part of the lean manufacturing process that drives the plant, implemented to improve the flow of work and eliminate unevenness throughout the system. In June of this year, GE launched its Advanced Manufacturing and Customer Experience Center in Mebane, following a $6 million infusion in digital fabrication equipment and progressive build-moving lines. This was the first time a configured-to-order product of this type and volume have been implemented in a moving assembly line within our business, says Stuart Thompson, the Cary-based general manager of GE's Power Equipment Division. While the plant's contribution to GE's $147 billion revenue pot is almost irrelevant, for the 620 workers trekking down I-40 and I-85 every morning, it's economic security for the families and for Mebane, a community nestled between two large metros, Raleigh-Durham and Greensboro-Winston-Salem. The facility, one of the largest employers in the town of 13,000, is an anomaly in what many people still refer to as a bedroom town. A large majority of Mebane residents work in other parts of the state, including Durham and Raleigh to the east and Burlington and Greensboro to the west. Why Mebane? Proximity to talent, for one thing. We're looking for a different kind of worker now, says plant manager Jeff Blakeman. That new worker profile has more tech savvy, are experts in their specific fields of assembly, and know how to perform work more quickly and efficiently. They are also trained to spot problems before they become bigger issues that could shut down production for an extended period of time. That's why many of these workers are actively being recruited to the Mebane site, where a large piece of the GE motor control production was already taking place. The company recruits from many local schools, including NC State University, Duke University, and UNC Chapel Hill, as well as technical schools such as Wake Tech, Durham Tech, and Danville Community College. But perhaps more important than the physical location of the plant is what is going on in the inside that has many in the technical field keeping a close eye on GE's progress. The Mebane facility produces lighting panels, nearly all that the Fairfield, Connecticut-based conglomerate produces company-wide. With the changes in the production line, the plant can manufacture and finish an entire commercial breaker box unit in 53 minutes. Until now, it took workers 12 hours to build that same box. GE officials say the plant is now producing up to 500 lighting panel units each day, a 90% increase from just 24 months ago. The end product is shipped mainly to locations in North and South America via land, sky, and sea. While GE will not provide specifics on pricing, similar 800-amp commercial breaker boxes typically sell for around $3,000 apiece. Both Blakeman and Thompson point to increases in demand for the lighting panel units, as well as the decrease in production time as reasons for the high product output. Ask economic developers around Orange County and Mebane, and they are quick to point out that GE's technological push to reinvent the plant offers opportunities. When a company like that chooses to grow in your community, there's certainly a positive impact to the area, says Steve Brantley, director of Orange County Economic Development. Obviously, the GE name is very significant to the town of Mebane, and the plant's diverse workforce creates a larger appreciation for the industrial sector. Retooling a factory. The Mebane plant's primary output is akin to the breaker boxes seen in residential homes, but these are designed for commercial use and are much larger. While a home's breaker box usually provides 100 to 200 amps, these are 800 amp units and are used mainly in restaurants, shopping malls, and office buildings. The line moved from GE's Salisbury plant to Mebane about 2 years ago. GE closed that plant in 2013 and transitioned nearly 100 people, almost all of the Salisbury workers, to the Mebane facility. Before the new line was installed, each line worker had to build an entire breaker box from the ground up, says Catherine Perry, senior product manager of the lighting panel line. Now one panel comes off the line every 1 minute and 40 seconds. While it's the highest volume product produced in the Mebane plant, commercial lighting panels are only part of the story. In total, there are 8 products that are either entirely or partly manufactured in the space. In addition to the lighting panels, workers are busy building low-voltage and medium-voltage centers, switchboards, power panels, automatic transfer switches, control panels, and the sexy electric vehicle charging stations. The company did not receive incentives from the state or from Orange County for the expansion of the facility, nor for when it was originally converted to a GE plant in 1972. While the $6 million Mebane expansion represents mere pocket change for GE, a global concern with a market cap of more than $250 billion, the investment will help the facility streamline its manufacturing process, reduce waste, and maximize its production capabilities. It's seed money for what we're going to do here in Mebane, says Thompson. How Mebane fits in. The facility operates under GE's Industrial Solutions umbrella based in Plainville, Connecticut. The Cary office serves as the headquarters of the power equipment and power components businesses, which make up half of the Industrial Solutions global business. And in turn, the Industrial Solutions unit makes up more than half of GE's Energy Management division, which in the company's latest 10K reported $7.3 billion in overall revenue. According to Thompson, overall GE earnings in 2007 revealed that the capital business unit accounted for 57% of the total, with the industrial business making up the remaining 43%. In 2014, that trend had more than reversed, with industrial making up 58% of the overall operation earnings. The goal is 90%+ industrial, Thompson says. The Mebane plant plays a vital role in the overall strategy of increasing the industrial segment of the pie. The facility's Customer Experience Center, a global showroom and learning center for clients and prospects, is one of 3 around the globe within the Industrial Solutions business. The other 2 in Poland and Puerto Rico are scheduled to be unveiled in mid-2016. The Customer Experience. The roughly 30,000-square-foot showroom and learning center is one of the defining elements of the reimagined Mebane plant. The area features samples of each of the products manufactured at the plant, including a BrakeMaster utility apparatus that currently powers the entire Mebane facility. Each display is fully assembled and can be pulled apart, revealing the mechanical innards. Some have cutaways covered in plexiglass so customers can watch them work. A digital display screen, which features a virtual replica of the showroom, includes clickable versions of the sample products in the room that can be twisted and dissected any way the customer wishes. And then the power goes out. It's pitch black in the room. After about 2 seconds, it's back on. It's part of the demonstration customers experience to show the transfer of power to a backup generator. Most of our customers have a sort of shocked reaction to this, says Marty Trivet, a North America power equipment product marketing leader within GE's Industrial Solutions business. Before the conversion, the plant hosted less than 100 customers per year on average. Since the June grand opening, the plant has seen about 350 customers come through, and another 200 are lined up to come in before the holiday season. will crest well over 500 customers in the plant by the end of the year, Blakeman says. Customers from all across the globe visit the Mebane plant to test and inspect orders. We have customers coming in from all over the U.S., truly nationwide, Thompson says. We also have customers coming in from Canada, Mexico, and Latin America, including Brazil and Venezuela, as well as the U.K., Europe, and parts of Asia, including Australia and New Zealand. A modern plant. About 360,000 square feet is floor space for manufacturing. Technology lords over the entire manufacturing side of the plant in the form of a software called Prophecy, spelled P-R-O-F-I-C-Y, that works to provide real-time data on all of the machines operating in the plant. The data can be accessed from anywhere in the facility, including Blakeman's office, allowing him to monitor workflow remotely. An advanced laboratory, led by Steve Miners, includes a product accelerator lab and a low and medium voltage product certification lab, where product testing is conducted. An in-house 3D printer fashions parts that are interfaced with working equipment models to test fit and viability. Tests measure pressure, temperature, dissipation, weight, and other functionalities. Larger printing projects are sometimes farmed out to other 3D printing vendors, and plant leaders are currently working to establish a long-term partnership with NC State University for the larger projects, Miner says. It's part of the Power America Advanced Manufacturing Consortium that President Barack Obama and the U.S. Department of Energy announced in early 2014. Growing pains. The transition from a traditional manufacturing plant to the modern hybrid it is today did not come without its hiccups. Change is never easy, Blakeman confesses. I think the biggest challenge is converting one's thinking to lean methodologies. It challenges years of operating in a certain way and forces you to new ways of thinking, stretching you along the way. While Blakeman stresses GE's policy of not commenting on worker demographics or jobs data, he does say that the Mebane plant has a broadly diverse base of workers and that he has not seen any abnormal attrition trends during or post-conversion of the facility, apart from the closure of the Salisbury plant. As for Crisp, she hopes that trend continues. After all, she does police the line production of the highest volume unit in the entire plant, and she's ready to step in and fill gaps when there's a lull or people aren't pulling their weight. If I see somebody starting to get behind in whatever it is they're doing, I'll go ahead and sub in and get them caught back up. That way we don't have to stop the line of work, she says. It's that lean mentality that's driving the future of GE's Industrial Solutions division, and the Mebane plant is being positioned to lead that charge. To me, what any industrial or other knowledge-based manufacturing does to propel employees to learn an employable skill is what the state is trying to do, and GE is a good example of that here, says Brantley. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. The first headline, Food Network Chef Whips Up Meal for 300. On September 21, celebrity chef Robert Irvine of Food Network fame prepared a four-course dinner for more than 300 restaurant and hospitality leaders as part of the first-ever North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association Expo at the Raleigh Convention Center. Irvine also delivered the keynote address. The event brought together members of North Carolina's $20.2 billion restaurant, food service, and lodging industry. Peter Millar to outfit President's Cup International team and their dates. For the third time in a row, the Peter Millar apparel brand that's based in Raleigh has been picked to outfit the international team at one of the most anticipated events in golf, the biennial President's Cup. The President's Cup will be held October 6 through 11 in South Korea. Peter Millar will be outfitting team captain Nick Price, vice captain KJ Choi, and the rest of the assistants and team members for all of their on-course attire. Mike Bowers, our VP of design, has worked very closely with Captain Price to create a line that is unique and tasteful as the matches move to Asia for the first time in the Cup's history, says Peter Millar's president of golf, Todd Martin. Not to be left out, Peter Millar will also be outfitting the wives and significant others of the international team members traveling to South Korea for the competition. Heavely pens book on launching a startup. Triangle startup guru Chris Heavely, co-founder of Durham-based The Startup Factory, can now add author to his resume, having just published his first book, Build the Fort. The book, released September 22, isn't actually about building forts. It's about building companies. And Heavely says the feedback is already surprisingly positive. It seems like the simple messages resonate with readers, he says. The book is one part inspiration, one part lessons learned, and one part let's think like a kid, he adds. Heavely is hosting a reading October 15 at American Underground in Durham. Candy entrepreneurs win national contest. Tom and Jenny Thikekandam, founders of Tom and Jenny's Candy of Durham, recently won the Brewing the American Dream Pitch Room Wild Card Competition, sponsored by Entrepreneur and Samuel Adams. The couple will head to New York to compete for a grand prize of $10,000 and 1 year's worth of coaching from Samuel Adams founder Jim Koch and his senior executive team. Jenny Thikekandam, a dentist, co-founded Tom and Jenny's Candy with her husband after seeing so many pediatric patients with tooth decay. The candy is all natural and sugar-free, using a blend of natural sweeteners that the Thikekandam says can reduce cavity-causing bacteria by up to 70%. And the candy has 35% fewer calories than standard confections. And in a section called On the Ice, on September 19, Triangle Curling held an open house at its new facility in Durham, where Lindsay Lair demonstrated how to slide and deliver a stone. And in a section called You Said It, readers' comments on recent TBJ stories. Are these the snobbiest cities in North Carolina? And Charlotte is not number one? That's from Axe Luthra. Hey Raleigh Durham, slow down in fortify zones, NCDOT alerts. The thing that always terrifies me driving through that zone in the afternoon is that the lane markers are entirely indistinguishable from the road surface. And that's from Michael Teal. And Publix, Publix Supermarkets bypasses developer, pays top dollar for land and carry. We need their new development planned for Northern Durham. Some people are not happy. And that's from Ted Maynor. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Amanda Hoyle. The main headline, Publix picks its spots. Grocery giant buys land for third triangle location. Florida grocery giant Publix Supermarkets is taking a different tactic in securing at least one site for future development of a new store in a high growth area of the triangle. Instead of partnering with a private real estate development firm as Publix has for most all of its other new supermarket sites in North Carolina, the grocer has instead struck a deal to buy the land itself directly from the Cary property owners, and it paid a hefty price for it, too. Publix North Carolina LP paid $3.7 million for close to 11 acres of land, or almost $340,000 per acre, for an undeveloped site at the corner of Green Level West and Green Level Church Roads in West Cary. The property is less than 1 mile west of the NC 540 Western Wake Freeway intersection, which also connects to NC 55, and it is less than a mile from the new Green Level High School that's under construction and expected to serve more than 2,000 students when it opens in 2017. Public spokeswoman Kim Reynolds says the company has set no timeline for when it might start construction of a new store at the Green Level Church Road site. We often prefer to own property when it makes business sense to us, says Kim Reynolds, with Publix division office in Charlotte. The West Cary land is already zoned for commercial development and would not require a rezoning for any retail use, confirms Dan Mathies, a development liaison with the town. Mathies says town staff held a pre-application meeting with a potential investor seeking to build a 45,000-square-foot grocery store with another 9,000 square feet of additional retail space at the Green Level Road site. But to date, there has been no formal application filed for site plan approval. Publix has so far only confirmed plans for 3-store locations in the Triangle, compared to 13 in the Charlotte region. Statewide, Publix has confirmed locations for 19 stores expected to be open by late 2016. Longfellow buys Keystone Tech Park in Durham for $118 million. Boston-based Longfellow Real Estate Partners has added another 11 office buildings to its portfolio of properties in the Triangle, with the $117.7 million acquisition of Keystone Technology Park in Durham. The buildings were 84% leased at the time of the deal, with a tenant base that includes technology and research companies like Syngenta, Census, and Experimental Pathology Laboratories, Incorporated. Longfellow acquired the buildings from Houston-based The Lionstone Group. Umstead finishes $3 million in renovations. Most of the changes are subtle inside the newly renovated conference center spaces at Cary's 5-star rated The Umstead Hotel and Spa. But General Manager Jim Bailey says that all of the $3 million in improvements that were made were designed to keep the property ahead of the curve. The hotel has updated all of its audio-visual equipment to 4D technology, replaced all the carpets and curtains, and improved sound dampening between rooms, among other improvements. Invisalign creator plants East Coast flag in Cary. The creator of the Invisalign teeth straightening device, Align Technology Incorporated, has been quietly over the hot summer months building a base of operations for an East Coast expansion at an office park near Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Company spokeswoman Shirley Stacy says Align has already hired 15 to 20 people at its new Cary office, and executives expect the office to expand to 100 over the next 5 years. Most of the jobs are related to research and development, but a few are in sales. Deutsche Bank to expand again, hire 250 more. Deutsche Bank's DB Global Technology Incorporated unit in Cary that already employs close to 600 people will be expanding again. Company executives on September 22 made a commitment to create another 250 jobs in Cary and invest another $9 million in the region before the end of 2016. State officials have also approved a JDIG incentive package for the company worth $3.38 million over 12 years if the company reaches its hiring goals. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Pharmaceuticals page written by Jason DeBrun. The first headline, Big Deal, RTP's Transentrix acquires Italian division for $100 million. Research Triangle Park surgical device manufacturer Transenderix Incorporated acquired the surgical robotics division of Sofar SPA, an Italian healthcare company, in a deal that could be worth $100 million. Sofar developed the Telelap ALF-X robotic system for minimally invasive surgery, which Transenderix will combine with its surgical robot, Surgibot. The company submitted an application to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to market the Surgibot system and expects a response in December or early 2016. At the closing, Sofar received $25 million in cash and 15.5 million shares of Transenterix common stock with a value of $43.7 million based on the September 18 closing price of $2.81. In June, Transenterix raised $50 million from public markets to help launch a sales effort. The company reported having $71 million in cash and equivalents as of June 30. As it has been primarily a research and development stage company, Transenterix has not generated significant revenue. At its core, The company's leaders and investors believe there will be an increasing number of ambulatory surgery centers in the United States and internationally that could benefit from the addition of robotic-assisted, minimally invasive surgery systems. Since inception, TransEnterix has accumulated a deficit of $155 million, largely from research and development costs. Weeks after its launch, Foundry sells. Only a few weeks after taking a venture capital investment, Research Triangle Park-based Foundry Pharmaceuticals was acquired by Boston-based Intarsia Therapeutics Incorporated. Foundry, and that's spelled P-H-O-U-N-D-R-Y, which has created a portfolio of optimized peptides that could treat diabetes and obesity, was founded in 2015 after 6 years of work as part of the Enteroendocrine Discovery Performance Unit of GlaxoSmithKline. In some ways, a restructuring that resulted in hundreds of Glaxo layoffs actually helped Foundry. Intarsia sees the Foundry product portfolio as a way to build on its own investigational therapy, ITCA-650, which is in late-stage testing. According to Reuters, Intarsia hauled in financing in April that values the company at $5.5 billion, more than any other unlisted emerging biotechnology business in history. Financial details were not disclosed. Intarsia will fund the acquisition via a combination of cash and stock. Intarsia will retain all Foundry employees as well as a presence in RTP and expects to double the headcount in less than 18 months. Paul Feldman, the Foundry CEO, will become a member of Intarsia's executive leadership team, serving as vice president and head of discovery and translational medicine, while Andrew Young will become vice president and chief scientific officer, and Ved Srivastava will assume the role of vice president of peptide chemistry. "We are excited about joining Intarsia and combining our respective technologies," says Feldman. We've long held the belief that Intarsia's continuous zero-under-delivery platform is the ideal method for peptide administration. And finally on this page in the Pharma Corner, two drug developers get a boost from the FDA. Two Triangle drug developers receive designations from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration that could bring them perks. The FDA recently granted Durham's Viamet Pharmaceuticals and Chapel Hill's Sempra Incorporated a Qualified Infectious Disease Product, or QIDP, designation, which offers the potential for a priority review by the FDA, eligibility for fast-track status, and a 5-year extension of marketing exclusivity under the Hatch-Waxman Act. Viamet is developing a drug to treat cryptococcal meningitis. Sempra's experimental drug would treat acute bacterial skin and skin structure infections. And now we turn to the On Transportation page in the Triangle Business Journal, and this is written by Jeff Jeffrey. The first headline, New Rail Safety System May Face Delays. The North Carolina Department of Transportation expects to have all of the necessary equipment for a new automated safety system installed by the end of the year, putting it on track to meet a federal deadline. But whether the system will be up and running is another question. In 2008, Congress ordered the nation's railroads to adopt the Positive Train Control System by the end of this year. The PTC system uses global positioning system technology and radio receivers along tracks to allow trains to communicate with one another and to put on the brakes when a train is traveling too fast. North Carolina Rail Division Director Paul Worley says NCDOT is in pretty good shape in getting all the equipment in place on the Piedmont Railroad between Raleigh and Charlotte. NCDOT spent about $2 million to equip the 8 locomotives it owns with the PTC system. The department also ordered a 9th set of equipment to keep as a spare. But he says it is up to the rail lines that operate those locomotives to ensure the systems on individual locomotives are corresponding with GPS satellites with one another and are properly signaling sensors along railroad tracks. Norfolk Southern Corporation and CSX Corporation, the two rail lines that operate locomotives on the Piedmont Railroad, have already signaled they will not meet the December deadline in letters to U.S. Senator John Thune, who chairs the Senate Transportation Committee. On the Carolinian Railroad, which runs from Charlotte to New York with a stop in Raleigh, Amtrak is also working to meet its obligations under the PTC mandate. An Amtrak spokeswoman could not say what the status is in North Carolina. Durham Chapel Hill Mayors, light rail not dead yet. The mayors of Durham and Chapel Hill aren't giving up hope for the proposed $1.5 billion Durham Orange light rail line, despite the surprising and potentially crippling blow dealt by the General Assembly in the new state budget, which caps state funding for light rail projects at $500,000. That's far less than the roughly $138 million that GO Triangle was scheduled to receive for the project this year under the North Carolina Department of Transportation's 10-year State Transportation Improvement Program. Chapel Hill Mayor Mark Kleinschmidt says the General Assembly's vote to cap funding for light rail projects is a disappointing setback, but Kleinschmidt says the project still has some options that keep him from going pessimistic. For one thing, the Durham Orange Light Rail line is still in the relatively early stages of planning. Kleinschmidt says that as the process moves forward, local officials will collect more data about the economic impact of the light rail line and its potential to drive future growth in the area. He notes that the same day the General Assembly unveiled its budget, the Federal Transit Administration awarded GO Triangle $1.7 million to study ways to enhance the line's economic development prospects. Additionally, an environmental impact study is in the final 45-day comment period, where it is presented to the FTA. That document is one of several that will be used by the FTA to determine the level of federal funding. GO Triangle has scheduled several meetings to allow the public to weigh in on the project. The rough plan for the 17-mile Durham Orange Light Rail line is to line up federal funding for approximately 50% of the project. North Carolina and local governments were to split the remaining cost. Voters in Orange and Durham counties approved a 1/2-cent sales tax increase to cover the local portion of the project. That's the basic formula used in Charlotte for the Blue Line extension to the city's light rail system. Durham Mayor William Bell says he remains optimistic that the cap will be overturned in future legislation. Right now, we're just trying to figure out why they included this cap, Bell says. Once we know that, we will know better how to address their concerns and change their minds. Meanwhile, the Triangle business community is left wondering what comes next. Joe Malazzo, executive director of the Regional Transportation Alliance, a business coalition, says, "We have to have a high-capacity transit option between Durham and Chapel Hill. There is clarity on that, and that's where the conversation among our members has focused." And finally, in a section called By the Numbers, U.S. businesses are becoming increasingly willing to pick up the cost of a first-class or business flight for their employees. 67.4%. Number of corporate travel specialists in 2015 who said their clients are requesting to travel in the front of the plane, a 16.1% increase from 2012. 50.8%, number of respondents who said a company policy kept their clients from flying business or first class. 14.8%, number of respondents who said 11% or more of their clients use services like Airbnb when traveling for business. And now we turn to the On Technology page written by Lauren Onasorge. The main headline, Credit Suisse to expand, hire immediately. A global bank with a Triangle presence is about to go on a hiring binge. Swiss finance giant Credit Suisse confirms it will occupy 70,000 square feet of space in one of Lenovo's buildings on Paramount Parkway in Mooresville. The move is to accommodate an already announced 25% headcount expansion in the Triangle, where the company employs 1,700 in Research Triangle Park. Specifically, both the RTP-based investment banking support and finance divisions will be relocating to the new facility to be subleased from Lenovo under a 5-year contract. According to site lead Jim Captain, hiring will commence as soon as possible in both locations. We put people on hold because spaces become very tight in our existing facility, he says. We can open up the gates again in January. As for electronics giant Lenovo, a company spokeswoman says it's been consolidating since its deal for IBM's RTP-based low-end server division, the move that prompted its own expansion into what used to be the Ericsson campus at RTP. Lenovo currently occupies 2 Triangle campuses, the Morrisville site, dubbed a dual headquarters to its Chinese operation, and its RTP-based enterprise complex. The company has undergone multiple layoff waves over the past year. The most recent round of cuts, announced in August, impacted 230 of Lenovo's then 3,200 employees in the Triangle. The company currently has about 3,000 local employees. And in a section called Red Hat News, first there's a quote from Frank Calderoni, former Cisco CFO, speaking after his first full quarter as CFO of Raleigh-based Red Hat, saying opportunities are big for the open source giant. The key thing for us is going to be to scale to meet that opportunity, he says. For the first time, Red Hat announced it had surpassed the $500 million revenue mark in a single quarter. The Raleigh company reported a lot of wins on its earnings call, crediting the rise in cloud computing for the upswing. Red Hat, quarter two by the numbers, $504 million total revenue in the second quarter, $442 million the subscription revenue for the quarter, $363 million subscription revenue in infrastructure-related offerings for the quarter, $79 million subscription revenue in application development-related and other emerging technologies offerings for the quarter, and 400, the number of Red Hat associates hired in the quarter, 600 so far this year. And under a section called Deal of the Week, one Durham firm acquires another. We Geo Learning, a Durham-based education software firm founded by Tracy Bissett and Ian Huckabee in 2010, was acquired by Durham-based Principal Technologies. No financials were given. And the number in this section is 83. WeG's 9 employees give Principal Technologies a total headcount of 83. And then finally, in the He Said It section, a quote from Jim Beck, who is CEO of Trust Atlantic, speaking shortly after regulators approved his Raleigh Bank's pending buyout by First Tennessee parent First Horizon, expected to close October 1. We'll now have substantially more resources at our disposal, both capacity as well as a broader, deeper product line. So we think we're going to be in a good spot to take advantage of market opportunities. And then also we have an article on a page called On Film Credits, also written by Lauren Onisorge. The headline, Film Grants Awarded to North Carolina Productions. It's official. 3 new film projects join Under the Dome, making a total of 4 members of an elite club of productions incentivized by the state of North Carolina's new grant program. It's good timing as sci-fi serial Under the Dome announced its cancellation. All 4 productions scored a piece of a $10 million grant. 2 other approved projects, a Dirty Dancing remake, and an independent feature about Davidson basketball, met with delays and returned their allotments to the state. Next time around, the State Commerce Department will have more to work with, as the recently approved budget allocates $30 million per year in film grant funds for the next 2 fiscal years. Coming, Good Behavior, a TNT television pilot to be filmed primarily in Wilmington, requested $1.3 million film grant, received $1.25 million film grant. The show, set to star Downton Abbey veteran Michelle Dockery, picked North Carolina over Georgia. The project plans to hire 340 North Carolina residents, according to its application to the North Carolina Department of Commerce, and will spend $5.1 million in the state. Love It or List It, an HGTV house renovation show, was initially rejected for a grant but kept on filming in the Triangle. The show was finally approved for a grant in September, requested $1.8 million, received $950,000. The show said in its grant application that it would be hiring 236 permanent North Carolina residents and spending $7.2 million in the state. Untitled Jody Hill Project, a film to be shot in the Asheville area, was written by a group of UNC School of the Arts alumni, including Jody Hill, Danny McBride, and John Carcieri, co-wrote the film script about a father and a son bonding over a hunting trip rumored to be called The Legend of the White-Tailed Deer Hunter. Requested $3.2 million, received $2.8 million. Going Under the Dome, a Wilmington-based science fiction show which aired on CBS, received $5 million from the state. The show committed to spend $35 million in North Carolina. While CBS canceled the series, production officials had already said that if renewed, the show would be going elsewhere to shoot season 4, blaming the state's lack of film funding. While $5 million may seem like a lot, it's far less than the $8.8 million in tax credits the production claimed in 2014. In 2013, the show claimed $8.4 million in tax credits, according to Department of Revenue records. At its peak, the show employed 1,500 people in North Carolina. The state's tax credit film incentive program expired January 1, replaced by the grant program. And now we turn to the A Better World page in the Triangle Business Journal, and we start with Todd Cohen's column. Todd Cohen publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. The headline on his column, United Way Goal, Collective Impact. From 2004 to 2014, when Laura Zink Marks served as executive director of NJ211 Partnership, a subsidiary of United Way of New Jersey, the referral and resource hotline for health and human services grew rapidly to serve United Way affiliates, the nonprofit agencies they support, and government agencies in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. The partnership also emerged as a model for the new role United Way increasingly aims to play in local communities as a catalyst, hub, and resource for collaboration to address urgent community needs. And it served as a revenue center, expanding its staff to 100 employees and its annual operating budget to $5 million. Now, as president and CEO of United Way of North Carolina, Marks is building on that model to help its members reinvent the way they do business. Those members include 57 local United Ways and 2 United Funds that serve 83 of the state's 100 counties, and last year raised a total of $100 million for health and human services. Like any business, we're reimagining what the future holds for us as a state organization, and local United Ways are reimagining their role in the community, says Marks, who joined the statewide organization last October. United Way of North Carolina also manages the state employees' combined campaign, which in 2014 raised $3.8 million, and under a separate nonprofit, it administers a 211 hotline that serves all 100 counties through call centers in Asheville and Durham. With $1.7 million from the William R. Keenan Jr. Charitable Trust in Chapel Hill, United Way is expanding its 211 service to Florida, Kentucky, and New York, and has developed 211counts.org. a web-based dashboard that tracks data from calls and will be used in North Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, Michigan, and New York. It also is offering its 211 service to nonprofit and government agencies as a portal to help them better serve clients. United Way, for example, is partnering with the North Carolina Coalition to End Homelessness, which is developing plans to coordinate resources for people facing homelessness. Through an initiative to be piloted in Onslow County, United Way's 211 service will serve as a one-stop shop aggregating data about all public and private agencies serving people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness, and as a front door for coordinated assessments of callers, Mark says. The 211 service represents a new model for United Way, Mark says. Other keys to United Way's emerging strategy are to use technology more effectively, share best practices and success stories at individual United Ways, shift the perception of United Ways working to investing in collective impact from fundraising and advocate for public policies that strengthen charities. United Ways strategy is to keep looking for new ways to be part of collaborative efforts to raise community needs, Mark says. The door's open until it's closed, she says. Let's keep thinking about ways we can bring value to the work that we do. And in nonprofit news, Lenovo donates school supplies. Lenovo recently completed a nationwide caravan donating 75,000 back-to-school supplies to students. The caravan began here in the Triangle at four different Boys and Girls Clubs, each receiving 10,000 supplies. Buy a box, donate a box of produce. Raleigh-based The Produce Box kicked off its annual Hero and Community Box program, an initiative that allows members to donate boxes to designated organizations each month. This year alone, the two programs combined have generated 1,452 donated boxes, yielding 20,328 pounds of local produce to local agencies. Dance event will benefit Durham Park. Hope Valley marketing experts will host Meals from the Market. Shut Up and Dance, benefiting Durham Central Park. The event will take place October 4 at West Village 3 Terrace on the second level at 605 West Main Street in Durham. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page, where Triangle Business Journal welcomes letters to the editor. This letter to the editor is written by Tom Adams, chairman of the North Carolina State Ports Authority. And the headline on the Viewpoint column, North Carolina Ports Offer Many Benefits. The September 18 article, North Carolina Ports, Too Small, Too Shallow, Too Idle, did not fairly or accurately portray the North Carolina State Ports Authority's business nor its contribution to the state's economy. As chairman of the authority's board of directors, I am proud of the progress we've made, the position we are in, and the support we are receiving from North Carolina. This is a place of opportunity that works as an economic engine for the state. This message was clearly conveyed to the writer, yet the article took on a different editorialized tone. Exporters and importers continue to recognize the inland logistics advantage of North Carolina's ports and their operational efficiencies. A lack of congestion, faster gate turn times, and increased crane moves per hour have led to significant container volume increases year over year, making the Port of Wilmington one of the fastest growing ports on the U.S. East Coast. We moved the most TEUs in the authority's history and also had our most profitable year on record in our latest fiscal year. As far as where we are positionally, North Carolina's ports are a few of the most market-accessible ports on the U.S. East Coast. With 1,000 miles of North Carolina's borders, within 1,000 miles of North Carolina's borders are more than 170 million U.S. and Canadian consumers, more than 65 of the country's top 100 metropolitan areas, and nearly 60% of total U.S. retail sales. We are in a unique position to be extremely successful. I believe that we have the services, connectivity, capacity, and necessary backing from the state legislature to support our market, businesses, and consumers. North Carolina's ports in Wilmington and Morehead City, plus inland terminals in Charlotte and in Greensboro, link the state's consumers, businesses, and industry to world markets and serve as magnets to attract new businesses and industries. Port activities contribute statewide to over $14 billion in annual economic contribution and $707 million each year in state and local tax revenues. We have also embarked on a multi-year extensive infrastructure investment plan. We will be spending a significant amount on a berth replacement project, the extension of our gauge rails, and the purchasing of new container cranes. This sets us up perfectly for the future. We are excited about where we are going and do not believe we are too small, shallow, or idle to accomplish our strategic plan. North Carolina's businesses and industries rely on healthy, vibrant facilities like the North Carolina State Ports Authority. I am proud of the men and women who work for the authority and the more than 76,700 jobs the authority sustains. And now we read the executive voice that focuses on Ray Gamble. The headline, "We are replacing a human sense. Med-L developing next generation cochlear implant." And this article is written by Jason DeBruin. Thanks in large part to early success of its next generation cochlear implant, Med-L CEO Ray Gamble expects to increase staff by 10%. Moreover, the company is in the final stages of finding larger office space. The company currently has about 120 employees in North America and about 80 in the Research Triangle Park office. While Gamble couldn't offer specifics about the new office space before all contracts become finalized, he said Med-L would stay inside the park. In January, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved Med-L's new Synchrony cochlear implant, the first such device that patients can wear during a magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, procedure at 3.0 Tesla, a stronger MRI scan. There exist cochlear implants that can be worn at lower strengths, but this is the first and so far only device approved to be worn during the stronger MRI scan. What is your management style? I would say I'm pretty hands-off, though my staff might disagree with that. I'm trained as an audiologist. I've done pretty much every job in this company. I believe that this is a company where we give you the knowledge and then we set you free and see what you can do with it. I think we give our employees a lot of leeway to be creative and not be so much in a box. What is the management structure? I have 14 department heads and they pretty much manage their own staff. I do strategic long-term things and I have other employees who do the day-to-day stuff. The cochlear implant market is basically dominated by two companies, Med-L and Cochlear. What are the challenges and advantages in competing in a space that is so concentrated? As in any industry, competition drives improvement. Med-L will always put our recipients first, no matter what our competition is doing. But we do strive to be the best in every facet of this industry. This is particularly true when it comes to servicing our customers, both the healthcare professionals who work with our products, as well as our recipients who have chosen this lifetime partnership with us. What drew you to a career in helping others to hear? The impact of hearing loss is personally relevant to me, as my father had a bilateral, moderate to severe hearing loss my entire life. I observed the impact that his hearing loss had on him, as well as my family. It's because of my father that I became an audiologist and dedicated my career to assist people affected by hearing loss. No one should have to suffer the stress, depression, frustration, and social isolation hearing loss can cause. Med-L recently received FDA approval for a next-generation cochlear implant, Synchrony. Talk about what makes it different and why it's a big step forward in the industry. The Synchrony cochlear implant system is the only available cochlear implant that has approval for scanning at 3.0 Tesla without magnet removal in the United States. This is significant as it is almost 100% certain that every person will undergo MRI scanning at some point in their life. As the magnet does not need to be removed, the cochlear implant recipient does not need to undergo any additional surgeries to remove the magnet, nor have a period without sound due to the procedure. What will be the next big improvement in the industry? The cochlear implant industry is certainly a fast-paced industry for sure. I think we'll see a continuing of the miniaturization of cochlear implant systems. The audio processors especially will become smaller and smaller with no sacrifice in performance. I also think we'll be seeing more and more advancements in connectivity and lifestyle. Enhancements and lifestyle enhancement for cochlear implant users. What is your favorite part about the job? Helping the hearing impaired. We are replacing a human sense. That is really nice. It's incredibly rewarding. I mean, we change people's lives. Finish this sentence. Nothing makes me more frustrated than paperwork. Do you have a favorite quote or a motto? I don't really have a favorite quote. I guess my motto would be, I don't want to make my life any more difficult for any individual than it has to be. I don't want to make life any more difficult for an individual than it has to be. What are some of your hobbies? Biking. I go to the gym quite a bit. Travel, which is quite nice. I'm sort of starting gardening, but I don't think I really like it. I'm a voracious reader. What would be your favorite restaurant? Probably gravy, and I like Chubby's Tacos. As long as the food is good, I would much rather have a cold beer in a tiny little dark place than in a fine dining situation. And we're going to stop there with our reading of the Triangle Business Journal as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can reach us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.